Hey guys, Olivia Ellen Price here. Before we get to today's episode, I want to let you know that we just launched a Bay Curious newsletter. Each month, it will have answers to even more questions not featured on the show, plus behind-the-scenes photos, fun facts, and lots of other neat stuff from the Bay Curious team. You can subscribe at baycurious.org/newsletter. All right, on with the show. Let me set the scene. You've swiped right on the app. The date went really well. Now you're back at their place. They've put on some sweet music. You're in this big, beautiful room with two sets of bay windows and a couch the size of a small bus. You know it's rude, but you just have to ask. How much is your rent? We all know the refrain. The rent is too damn high. But a few people are lucky. They've got rent-controlled apartments in desirable neighborhoods and are paying way less than others stuck paying sky-high rent. As Bay Area rents go up and up, some have wondered, is rent control a good thing and could we use more of it? In San Francisco, the average rent for a one-bedroom is more than $3,000. Reporter Jessica Plotcheck is here to explore how rent control might be making things better or worse.
In California, rent control limits how much a landlord can raise rent year after year. And right now, only 15 cities in the state have some form of rent control.
It's really the bigger cities. So LA, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose.
This is Matt Levin, a data reporter for Cal Matters and co-host of the housing podcast, Gimme Shelter. And he says even in those cities, not every home is under rent control. That's because of this 1995 law that was trying to encourage building by limiting rent control. It's called the Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act.
That passed by one vote that shapes rent control policy across California.
It's a huge deal that most people know very little about, and it limits rent control in two big ways. First, Costa-Hawkins made it so when a tenant moves out of a rent-controlled apartment, the landlord can raise rent to whatever they want. This is called vacancy decontrol.
I see old apartments all the time. They're total pieces of crap, and they're charging like a bazillion dollars, right? But once you get into that apartment, they're limited in how much more they can raise it. Every time a person moves out, they can reset it.
Costa-Hawkins also made it so you cannot have rent control on most single-family homes or condos, meaning most of the suburbs can't be rent controlled. And you can't have rent control on new buildings. So the law created a cutoff date.
You can't impose rent control on properties that were built after 1995.
As for the cities that already had rent control, Costa-Hawkins froze their cutoff dates where they stood. In Oakland, the cutoff is in 1983. Berkeley is 1980. While in San Jose and San Francisco, nothing built after 1979 can have rent control.
So anything new and nice looking in San Francisco is not going to have rent control on it.
So all these limits are supposed to encourage developers to build more housing.
Yeah, because new housing means guaranteed market rate rent. Builders will hopefully see dollar signs and want to build loads of housing for our hungry, hungry housing crisis.
All right, so now I have to ask, how is it actually working out?
Well,
there is not as much really great research on the effects of rent control as you might think.
But there is some good research.
My name is Rebecca Diamond. I'm an assistant professor of economics at the Stanford Graduate School of Business.
Many arguments for or against rent control are theoretical. But Diamond and her partners got data. They looked at the address changes of San Franciscans over roughly two decades, starting when rent control expanded to small multifamily housing.
Okay, let's get to it. Who benefits?
First up, people who have rent control.
So we find for the tenants that were living in San Francisco at the time of the law change, so they're already in their apartment, they benefit dramatically.
In 18 years, people whose apartments became covered by rent control saved $7 billion. People over 40 saved the most. They saw about three times the benefit as young people. That's because young people can't stay put in the same way. They have to leave those rent-controlled apartments because of new jobs, marriages, and growing families.
Now let's look at who does not benefit from rent control.
This one won't surprise you. Landlords.
Landlords really, really dislike rent control. This is a very costly policy for them. It forces them to provide these subsidies.
With their earnings capped, some landlords decided to leave the rental business altogether by selling or converting their apartments. At the end of the study, 15% of those rent-controlled apartments were taken off the rental market entirely.
That decreases the supply of rental housing, and if supply goes down, prices have to go up for supply to equal demand.
With more people trying to get into fewer apartments, landlords can charge more. So that gets us to another group that does not benefit: renters who do not have rent control. Diamond's study found that across the city, rent went up by 7%, costing about $5 billion.
Ugh. To recap, rent control in the Bay Area works best for people who have been in their apartments for a long time. But for newcomers or those paying market rate, our form of rent control actually pushed their costs up. So Jessica, would we be better off if we just got rid of it?
Great question. The Bay Area Council Economic Institute,
which is not a bastion of socialism, but it is more aligned with the business interests of the Bay Area.
They did this simulation looking at what would happen if we changed various housing policies in San Francisco. And
what they found was that if you did away with rent control, that is the worst thing that you could do if you wanted to preserve the affordability of the people currently in the city.
Getting rid of rent control would mean more than 16,000 households would find themselves in unaffordable housing overnight.
Time and again, we see the markets just systematically fail in their stated purpose of providing decent housing opportunities to everyone.
I met up with Tony Samara from the advocacy group Urban Habitat. Samara says this is a civil rights issue and that rent control is a frontline defense against resegregation in the Bay Area.
The consequence of rent control is actually the problem of not enough rent control. If you have a city that passes controls on pollution, and then the polluting industries pick up and move to the next city, do you blame the regulation against pollution, or do you blame the polluter who's trying to get around the regulation?
He's pretty much saying that if rent control covered more units, fewer tenants would be getting huge rent increases out on the free market.
Some groups are working now to get rid of limits on rent control. A measure to overturn Costa-Hawkins will be on the November ballot. If it's overturned, the door would be open for California cities to expand rent control, maybe even to every single unit.
But landlords, developers, and their representatives are fighting hard against this, like Tom Bannon.
I am the CEO of the California Apartment Association.
Bannon told me that developers already face a number of hurdles when building, like NIMBYism, environmental restrictions, and the soaring costs of land and labor. He's worried that if rent control expands to new construction, investors might leave the state entirely.
You would have a serious reduction in the construction of any new apartments because builders and banks and just individuals would not be willing to take the risk.
And that's housing we really need. Just to keep up with population growth, California needs to build 180,000 new homes each year. Right now, we're averaging less than 80,000.
Reporter Jessica Plotcheck, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to answer more questions about housing and the Bay Area. So what's on your mind? What are you curious about? Submit your housing question at baycurious.org. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for that Bay Curious newsletter I told you about at the top of the show. We hope it will be an email you actually look forward to reading each month. Bay Curious is made in San Francisco at KQED. I'm Olivia Allen Price. Have a great week.